Yes, sir. Dieter and Jake coming down on a Tuesday. And Jake, I got to ask you, as we get underway here on YouTube and the podcast, we're talking about practice. I didn't go yesterday. The 49ers canceled their practices with the Saints in Irvine. That was supposed to be a big thing. Kyle Shanahan was very much looking forward to it. And then they're like, nah, we broke, so we can't go. And not fiscally broke, though. I think Brandon Ayuk and Trent Williams have a thought on that. We'll talk about that a bit later. They don't want to go down to Irvine before this preseason game against the Saints on Sunday. They kind of want this whole thing to be over with. I, being a man whose schedule gets tight, decided, you know what? I've been down to 49ers practice a bunch. I've been there every day I can. It has sucked. It has been juiceless. It has been worthless. And I felt like yesterday was going to be a day where that was the same. And buddy, it sounds like you got the full 49ers walk through it experience.
So the 49ers went, we had 23 guys injured on Thursday, and so we're not going down to Irvine. But don't
23.
worry.
So they have a 90-man roster. I think effectively like 87 of them are actually around on any given day.
Yeah, that's not including. I think the active PUP actually counts against the 90 man, which is why they
So
put Drake
it's like
Jackson.
85. So you got to hold in, a hold out, and then like
Yeah.
three guys who just don't practice and are just around because they've been
Right.
on
So you
PUP.
end up with 60 active players, roughly
Should make cut
around
down
there.
day easier.
Yeah.
Can we
So
find seven?
what they were gonna do, already hilarious enough, they were going to head down to Irvine for joint practices because the 49ers have a joke of a practice facility where
That's right.
their fields aren't big enough
That's
and
right.
they can't host other teams there.
That's right.
They've tried to acquire land elsewhere, but turns out they don't have the best relationship with the city of Santa Clara. I don't know if anyone was aware of this.
Who could have seen that coming? By the way, have you noticed when you go into the media room at Levi's Stadium that they no longer, like the stadium authority room that I'm pretty sure was a broom closet? Technically, that's the office of whomever runs Levi's Stadium. They just don't even have a sign on it anymore.
Oh, yeah.
It was a secret room right next to the 49ers media room that if you walk, I walked past a million times before I put two and two together. They don't even pretend like anyone goes in there anymore, which
No.
my official request is, can we have it?
Yeah, I'll take
We'll take
it.
it.
I'll take it.
I'll
Let
be the
us do the
stadium
pod from
authority.
there.
If
Yeah,
Grant
I'll
Cohn is
run it.
quality control, we'll be the Santa Clara County Stadium Authority.
I'm happy to do it.
Okay. Okay.
It's great. But
So what happened yesterday?
yeah, what happened yesterday was I felt swindled. The 49ers went from having Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday off, Thursday, Friday joint practice to Monday, surprise, special practice,
Yeah, middle of the
Tuesday
afternoon.
off. Yeah, Tuesday off, then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So Monday was a we have no one healthy and our starters need reps. Really, it was a walkthrough, in my opinion, for the game for the starters. Kyle said he hasn't decided. He'll base it on the practices if the starters play. The starters are playing. I think the starters are
Do they
playing.
have enough players to go with second and third strings?
That's the thing. They might not. So basically, it was like almost only the ones. It was not notable. It was a lot of Brock Purdy to George Kittle. And then Diamador Lenore had the only notable play where he reverse mossed. I think it was Danny
Wow.
Gray. Or maybe no, it was Jacob
Just
Cowing. It was
cowing.
like a
Just cowing out
deep ball to
from.
the end zone that like didn't look like that bad of a ball. And then Jacob Cowing just went, and he got mossed by
That's,
Diamador Lenore.
I mean, Diamador Lenore, if we're going to pretend as if any of this has mattered, Diamador Lenore has had an outstanding camp.
He's been
And
great.
any conversation about him being anything less than a 10, 11, $12 million nickelback has kind of gone out the window with how he's so perfect for that role. And it's something we identified in rookie OTAs when he was drafted. He also a content creator, so maybe there was a kinship there. But I have just been blown away with how perfect he seems for that role. And given how difficult it was for the 49ers to one put him in that role, right? It took a long time. And I do give credit to Steve Wilks for finally saying, this is right. This is the right thing to do. Even going from outside to inside, that's the right thing to do. And you know, the gap between Kaywan Williams and finding Diamador Lenore and then getting Diamador Lenore to this point now, where he just looks so natural, so perfect, exactly what Kaywan Williams was, but with much better coverage skills. I just don't see how you can let that guy walk out the door. But that's a conversation for down the line. He's been marvelous. The 49ers cornerbacks have been marvelous. And that's good because their entire team might just be cornerbacks at this point.
Yeah, you've got and one of them is hurt. Isaac Yiadom is hurt. He was like sneakily out for like a week or two. And Kyle's like, I asked him and Kyle's like, oh, yeah, he rolled his ankle. He's out another couple weeks. I'm like, so is it a high ankle sprain? Didn't get to even follow up on that. But that's not like ankle twist. That's like a 4-week absence.
Yeah. Love me some soft tissue injuries. I mean, it's so good. I read Matt Barros, who we both adore as a person, and he's an outstanding beat writer. I read him in The Athletic this morning just to confirm everything you were telling me from practice yesterday, of course. I mean, you got to get two sources in this world. And his suggestion in his article, I wouldn't call it a column, was that the 49ers go so hard at practice that, in fact, it's creating an issue with soft tissue injuries and things of that nature, hamstrings, the big stuff. So when you have Ambry Thomas breaking an arm, that's not something that can be protected against. You're playing football, stuff happens. I don't know what happened with Kalia Davis's knee. Apparently it's something behind the kneecap, which is all the knees and all the ligaments.
Right. They're like, yeah, he played the best because like he played the best game of his career. We were surprised. Apparently the behind his kneecap just exploded and there's a loose body in there.
That sounds awful. That just sounds absolutely brutal. And it's brutal for him because he was the one good defensive lineman in that game. And now they don't have that. And maybe
their defensive line, man.
It was a real issue coming in. It is something that almost the 49ers have admitted is an issue in that, hey, Leonard Floyd doesn't have the same juice that I think we thought he had. Yetur Gross-Matos, get this, after 4 years in the NFL, actually isn't that good of a player. And there's a reason that Carolina, who has all the cap room in the world.
We'll see.
I like the projectability, but at a certain point, when are you no longer projectable, right? At what point have you played enough to where we say, okay, it just isn't going to happen? And the 49ers are paying middle-class money to find out if he can or cannot do it. I don't like that combination. Hope they're wrong, or I hope I'm wrong.
And they're like pretty high on Jordan Elliott, who's looked good, but also has terrible tape.
I would like to see him in a preseason game, legitimately. I'd like to see him against some second string offensive linemen, because if he can wreck in that situation, then I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But I've seen him against first team offensive linemen and he sucks. He's terrible. And there's no reason everyone goes, oh, are you going to change your opinion on Jordan Elliott? Because both you and I were very flabbergasted by that signing. And it's like, I'm not going to change it until he does something on an NFL field.
That's fair.
Changes my mind. As much as I say, hey, D'Amador Lenore in practice looks so good. Give the man his money. Okay, well, that's coming off of a body of work last year, which was exceptional. And I think he's taken it to a new level. So I can project positivity. And if I'm wrong, what does that matter? if I'm wrong, I'm not saying give him the contract now. He's still got to do it this season. I'm just giving everyone a forewarning. With Jordan Elliott, you have a situation where you're right. He does look good in practice
against a really crappy offensive line.
And
he's like demolishing Nick Sakel.
Everyone, I could get in there and give you a rep where Nick Sakel spends more time on the ground than Brandon Pajemski. Like it's. I have to see it in a game. Maybe I am wrong. Maybe the 49ers pro personnel department nailed it. But I do come back to 2 points. One, the Browns were thrilled to let him go. I mean, people that I hadn't heard from in years, not NFL people, Browns fans. Apparently I have them. I am not completely persona non grata in the city of Cleveland, though. Play my cards right. Maybe I can get there. In that, they were like, have fun with Jordan Elliott. I'm a Mizzou guy. They're like, have fun with Jordan Elliott. So my internal biases say, hey, I should love Jordan Elliott. One, I didn't love Jordan Elliott at Mizzou. And two, my Browns sources are like, this guy's brutal. Here's the other thing. And I'm going to bring it up again because I really don't think that this has been highlighted enough with Jordan Elliott, because we don't talk about Jordan Elliott very much, but this is like a thing. And I never heard this before. And I know that some stuff gets over our heads. It's the NFL. There's 90 men on every roster and stuff. You know, it's a crazy league. Jordan Elliott restructured his rookie contract. He restructured his rookie contract. And you might go, well, yeah, dudes restructure contracts all the time. That is him saying, if I don't take less money on my rookie contract, they are going to cut me. And beyond that, no one is going to sign me because there is now a certain requisite salary floor that I would cost, and no one is going to give me that. I've never heard of anyone else in the league restructuring a rookie contract. And now here are the 49ers giving him 5X that rookie contract for film that indicates that this guy should not be in the league. Now, again, when you watch him practice, you can understand why he's in the league, but has he been appreciably better in practice than Evan Anderson, the meatball?
I would say, yeah, I would say, yeah. I mean, let me just real quick, with Kalia Davis gone, I'm looking at their defensive line. Let me just read out. They've got like 8 guys that they can confidently keep, and everyone else is, they've got on the end, Bosa, Floyd, Beal, Gross Matos. That is it, unless they like somehow have fallen in love with Jonathan Garvin and in the last 2 seconds. I'll say, I mean, he looks
Austin,
like
Austin Bryant has gotten some.
No,
love,
he's hurt. I think they just put him on IR. So he's done. So he's gone. Defensive tackle, Malik Collins, Javon Hargrave, both have insane mileage. You know, great players, both over the age of 30. Then it's Kevin Givens and Jordan Elliott. And then T.Y. McGill, who's looked bad, had like 2 offsides in the game. Evan Anderson, who I've seen nothing from.
T.Y. McGill had a legitimately cuttable football game, as in, like, we're going to leave you in Nashville.
And then Shaquelle Brown, who, like, we kind of like, but, like, hasn't done much. And then the only other guy on the edge is, like, Sam Ekwonu, who I like, but, like, I haven't seen anything.
He's injured.
He's a guy who I've, like, been like, oh, that was interesting. Maybe let's see him in a game. Haven't seen him in a game. He's, like, been hurt. They have no depth. They have 8 players on the defensive line. And if one of them goes down, they don't have an answer.
I want to be very clear about 2 things. One, if 97 goes down, this entire season's over, 2020 style. Okay? Full stop. Because there's no one to... What's happened here is, I'm adding an additional point here, Jake, apologies. They have turned their defensive line into their offensive line, where one elite player has to hold up the entirety of it. Nick Bosa cannot come off the field moving forward. If he comes off the field, they're just 4 men getting pushed backwards. That's it. Unless Javon Hargrave wants to have the same first half of last season that he had, and, you know, then you don't have anything for the second half. And I'm sure he's going to control himself and his explosion to keep those hammies there. But that's the worst possible injury you can get as a hand on the ground, 3 technique, where your entire game is splitting gaps. To not have your hammies, that's your entire sport. That's your entire career is to your hammies. And he is, as he talked about with me, I thought extremely candidly, like, he can't trust him. He can't trust him anymore. And I don't know when he'll ever be able to trust him again, because they're hamstrings, and no one's hamstrings are trustworthy. Not a single person's, maybe even Nick Bosa's.
Yeah.
So there's that. I also want to throw in the Saints practice. Pretty important. It would have been pretty important. You know why? Because the Saints are like one of the 3 teams in the NFL, maybe even fewer, but they are certainly one of them that has a bunch of dudes on the defensive line. Now, are any of them appreciably good? But they're better than almost everything the 49ers have after the first string. Like, legitimately, any one of these guys could do it, especially at defensive end. Those joint practices would have effectively been scouting trips for the 49ers down in Irvine, because the Saints are going to cut 1, if not 2, defensive ends, maybe a D tackle, who can play for another team. And the 49ers are in a position where they need to add one. So I hope that they get some first team reps or second team reps, and the Saints show something in the preseason so that these guys can better evaluate, because I have to think that maybe even 2 players from a different team are going to be on this roster on cutdown day when it comes to the defensive line.
They literally have to add defensive linemen. It's not even like, I think they could. No, they need someone. They don't have enough bodies. They don't have enough capable bodies. Like, I was just looking at the list of guys out there. There's like Hassan Ridgeway. There's wow, you know, on the edge. There's
to
like
be fair, Hassan Ridgeway, big boy. Big yeah. boy Hassan Ridgeway.
There's the ghost of Carl Lawson, Yannick Ngakoue, Shaq Barrett. I don't think they really want to pay anyone really, but it's not you, nothing.
You think you want to make Kyle. A trade with the you want to make a trade with the Jets and go get Hassan Reddick?
Might as well, honestly. I asked Kyle because Kyle every single year is like joint practices. Love them. Mm-hmm. They're huge, super important, value them more than the preseason games. And I was like, so, like, how concerned are you? And I should have phrased it in a way that, you know, when you say how concerned are you, Kyle's going to go, I'm not concerned at all.
That's I've just never been concerned about anything in my life. Don't put in the newspaper that I'm concerned.
Could have asked in a better way. I said, how concerned are you going in the season about being prepared if you don't have those joint practices? He said, no concern.
Yeah.
No concern. I mean, no concern.
To expand on it, he said, no concern. We didn't have them in Washington, and we didn't have them in Cleveland, and we didn't have them in... And I'm like, are we sure we want to hold those up as good examples of good teams?
We did once in Houston. I just think it breaks up the monotony of camp, but we can generate that stuff with ourselves. Sometimes it's nice to go against different schemes, but it all changes once the year starts anyway.
Yeah.
Fair. But the point is that, like, it means you get to see your ones against their ones. But when you don't have, like, all the ones available.
In a controlled environment where your quarterback's not going to die. So you can run your stuff.
Right.
You don't want guys to be ones in a preseason because of the risk of injury.
And you get one-on-ones in a way that you're like really going against someone from a different team that you haven't seen before. Like, you know, you get a chance. Oh, it's not just our back. Right. It's not just our guy winning against Nick Zakel. It's a real player. That's valuable. I don't care how much he downplayed it. It's meaningful.
It's immensely valuable, Jake, because one, it seems as if this entire preseason has been built around those two practices, right? They've been dogging it in just being casual every day. And I'm sure there's a million other factors that we can get into. You know, the fact that you don't have Trent Williams, the fact that you don't have Brandon Ayuk, all the injuries, like that's a factor. But it also seems as if these practices have been structured fundamentally to lead up to that thing against the Saints. And then the flip side of it is, now you have to treat preseason seriously. And that's something Kyle Shanahan has already shown us time and time again, year after year. He is not interested in doing. So you say, oh, well, the Rams aren't, you know, the Rams don't treat preseason well. They're having Stetson Bennett out there throwing four interceptions. They don't even play Garoppolo. Or the Packers don't take it seriously. That's fine. They all got the joint practices, right? They had the thing that they were building up for. You do need some time where your ones are going. And I can understand fully why Kyle is like, I would prefer to have my serious, let's see what the ones got stuff in a joint practice where it's more controllable, where we can get more reps, right? There's no three and outs.
Yep.
You can get more reps. You can get more appreciable data. You get better film, all this stuff. You can do small tweaks on the fly.
Yeah, you're working with the other coach on what the actual plan is.
Right. You both teams are getting better for the sake of, you know, the practice. This is why college teams, when they do their scrimmages, some of them go hard, some of them don't. When we talk about spring games, but in those, you can make these micro adjustments. The coach is on the field. You know, it's not structured totally like a game. That was what this entire preseason, at least ostensibly, was built around. And now that's not there. So are they going to up their game for these preseason games so that these first team guys can get serious reps and see what they got against somebody else? Because again, one weak link on a defensive line or the offensive line totally fucks any practice if you're going up against your own dudes.
Yeah. And one thing is, so now their plan is, I think probably Thursday, they're going to have what I've never heard Kyle call it before. He called it the mountain, their mountain practice, the longest practice of camp. They're going to have that probably on Thursday, which, you know,
didn't they do one of the, didn't they get well beyond base camp? Weren't they at, you know, almost pre-summit last Wednesday? That was a lame ass practice. That was supposed to be their previous mountain. That was K2 before Everest or whatever. I don't know anything about mountains.
I've watched a lot of climbing documentaries and I can't even tell you. So they're going to have their longest practice. I wish we had a little panic meter right in between us, just sort of like a, you know, when you're at the county fair and you hit that bell and it rings up, something like that. Maybe we'll
do it with your arms. Do it with your arm. Where are you?
I'm doing it in post.
I'm at like
so. So I would say This is zero. This is 10.
Okay.
On a scale of like panicking, of like, are the 49ers going to come out really sluggish and rough? I would be at about a 6.
Yeah. Yeah. I think this week will tell us everything, because I don't think that it can ever really be below about a 5, just given how it's already been. And it's, again, you're supposed to ramp up a little bit in preseason. Now, I would also say that you need to ramp up and then cool down. But it does feel as if now they're going to be going into, I think training camp is going to be over before they get serious. You know, after the third preseason game, which is going to be a short week in Las Vegas, they're going to barely practice beforehand. I don't know what they're going to do in that third preseason game, because I don't know what they're going to do in the second, but there's, you know, I would just say, given Kyle's track record, they'll probably ramp it up for the second preseason game, maybe do a full quarter or a couple of series with the first teams, and then get everybody out. And then I would say they're going to dog it in the third and just do it as a roster cut down final audition. Then
no question.
And then you have two weeks of practice, and there, I can just imagine right now the narrative going into those 2 weeks of practice, which are regular season practices. So we don't have access to them. I think we might get one.
We get like 4 periods, watch them stretch, run around, and then
so we can go take roll call. Cool. That means I won't be there. And of that, I have a feeling like they're going to be like, no. Now that it's closed doors, we're really going to ramp it up, and we'll have no way of knowing. But my guess would be that they're not actually going to ramp it up, and that they, because that's supposed to be sort of a cool down. You get a week where you just walk through, get healthy, and then you get into your regular week. They haven't ramped up enough to cool down. They're already cooling down, and they never got hot. I mean, this is a bad situation. They get the Jets and the Jets defense on Monday Night Football. You already have the peculiarity of you're playing on a Monday. You're getting a nationally televised game, first game of the season. We don't really know. You know, they're trying a new defense. The offense is going to be different in that they're probably going to be more spread out, I think, this upcoming season, 11 personnel. You don't have any resolution with Ayuk. You don't have any resolution with Trent Williams. We are less than 4 weeks away from the start of the season. It's not to say that everything is dire and they're screwed, but like, hey, now.
Right.
We're a month into training camp, effectively. It would be nice to have some progress, some resolution, and it feels like we're in the same place with both of them today as we were at the start of this motherfucker. And then I can just so easily see the first couple games of this season not looking good, to whatever that means, wins, losses, ties, not looking good. And now the 49ers, who I got my schedule right here on the wall, like, New Jersey.
It is New Jersey. They are the New Jersey Jets, as are the Giants. They all live there. The practice facilities in New Jersey. They're in Florham Park. Come on. They're in New Jersey.
Okay, so the New Jersey Jets, then they're at Minnesota at the Rams, okay? I don't think Minnesota is going to be as challenging.
By the way, J.J. McCarthy needs meniscus surgery. And Sam Darnold will be starting. Okay. Yes, they literally as we're speaking.
Literally, and that is a legitimate benefit, because J.J. McCarthy looked kind of sick in that preseason game. Now, second half against the Raiders, blah, blah, blah. Jack Johnson? What was his name? Jack Jones, the cornerback, who's a hell of a player for the Raiders, like a legitimately really good player. Yeah. He did get J.J. McCarthy on an interception. Like, you can't hold that against him. And then you're also dealing with a Kevin O'Connell offense. So you get the Shanahan offense with a quarterback that has way more scoot and way more arm strength than I ever saw from him at Michigan. I think J.J. McCarthy is in a position to be wildly successful. So this is legitimately a benefit for the 49ers.
They also botched it, though. The last time they went to Minnesota, I was there. It was a nightmare.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, it's a road game early in the year. Like,
short week.
Can't count anything out.
Short week, road game early in the year. And then you get the Rams, who, listen, I'm very high on the Rams. I know some people have a lot of questions. That's inarguably the best coach team in the NFC. It is a team that understands everything that's going on. You get the healthiest Stafford you're going to get all season, right? Because now he's ramped in a little bit. He's got a little bit going on. And now here he is. He's just slanging that thing. Questions with Puka Nacua for sure, but Cooper Kupp looks like he's back 100% and healthy. Their offensive line has gotten some major upgrades. I think their defense, which was pretty damn good in the second half of last year, you go, well, they lost Aaron Donald. Well, yeah, but they also got Versk and Fisk, and those two guys have, from what I've heard, looked really good in camp, and those guys who were really good in the second half of last year have taken a jump as well. Again, they're so well coached. That's a brutal game no matter what, in division at the Rams. This is, as much as I point to, let's just say, October 10th on, that's at Seattle Thursday Night Football, followed by Kansas City, followed by Dallas, bye week, Tampa, Seattle, Green Bay, Buffalo, Chicago, who looks like something, Chicago, Rams, Miami, Detroit, Arizona. That's how you end your season. Hope you all got that. It's all very accessible to the public on this thing. Sorry, someone's calling me. That might actually be a good call. So we might drop off and take it. Regardless, the first three games aren't easy either. They aren't easy either. The nice gap that you get is you get New England and Arizona back to back in weeks 4 and 5. But you got to get there. You got to get there. And right now, I have no confidence whatsoever that the 49ers are going to be cooking come September. And if you're not cooking come September, you're going to be paying the price come November and December. And you cannot be paying a price then. You need to be in a position to where a loss isn't going to burn you. And I think they're going to be in a position to where a loss can end their season by the time they get to Buffalo right after Thanksgiving. I know it's nihilistic. I know it's negative. But point to me, show me the positives. I'm not even asking you, Jake. I'm asking anybody. Show me the positives. Yep. Show me why we should believe that this team has it. Because the big concern that you and I both had coming into the season was, well, they got really lucky with injuries last year. Well, they sure as shit haven't been lucky with injuries this year, and it hasn't even technically started yet. So, oh, they'll get it out of the way. What's the best predictor of future injury? Past injury. I'm concerned.
Yeah, and their whole thing right now, I think, is they're scarred from that 2020 season coming off that Super Bowl, and it all, everything exploded, every muscle and every player's body. First, and they're saying, okay, we're just gonna take it easy, we're gonna like chill out and then ramp up later. You know, obviously, that there was that, I think it was mid-August this thing started in 2020. Yeah. It's hard to really compare anything to that. I think they're basing a little bit off of their approach of like, all right, how can we just survive training camp, which is such a horrible, horrible indicator of just being like, let's just survive this. You know, get to the start of the season.
I hate that logic. Let's just survive training camp. You guys are installing an entirely new defense. You have a second year starting free safety in a cover three. You have a defensive line that is predicated on depth with no depth. You have a linebacker opposite Fred Warner, whether it be Jalen Graham or D Winters, that has never been in a spot of that magnitude before. You're good at corner. We can all agree they're good at corner. That's important. It really is. Like, I feel good about their corners. They can slide like any of the six in there, and I'd feel fine about it. Like, Rock Ya-Sin can start for me. He's been really good in camp.
Yeah.
But
by the way, just as a note, as we're going through the schedule.
Yeah.
Do you know the last time the 49ers beat the Kansas City Chiefs? Correct. It was a decade ago. 49ers have not beat the Chiefs in a decade.
That was the Dwayne Bowe Chiefs. So let's show some respect, okay? Because I was looking this up, and this is something I want to get into with you a little bit later. I was looking up the top paid wide receivers from a decade ago, and oh boy, it's a who's who. It's jarring how bad. Like, Dwayne Bowe was getting paid a lot. And as I'm not sure if some people are coming in on this or not. Like, I grew up a Chiefs fan, and I held on to that for, I would say, you know, through my time at Mizzou, because it was easy to be a Chiefs fan living in Missouri. Definitely dropped it once I started, you know, covering the NFL professionally. I never cared that much about it. But Dwayne Bowe was awesome. Also, Dwayne Bowe was not that awesome. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Dwayne Bowe was like, much like a Wayne Krabet. Like, it's like, hey, it's good when you got a shitty team. Where you're like, that guy's awesome. That guy's the best player on a crappy team. Dwayne Bowe was, you know, manna from heaven for a crappy Chiefs team. So that's neither here nor there. It's just to say, you know, we talk a lot. We talk a lot about the second half of the schedule, the post-bye week, weeks 10 through 18, and how brutal that's going to be, going to Green Bay and Buffalo back-to-back on the week of Thanksgiving. Like, that's tough. You get, you know, at Tampa Bay. Okay, well, if you're going to play Tampa Bay, you sure as hell want to play them here, because that cross-country trip is going to be tough, especially coming off a bye.
Yeah. And like, then you come back, you face the Seahawks. Seahawks are just going to be frothing at the mouth. I don't know how good they're actually going to be.
No, but by that point, I'm pretty confident in it. Quarterback is going to be a massive issue, right? Geno has got injuries to start with. You're already starting with Geno, so how high is your ceiling? But it's not as if they don't have a great running back in Kenneth Walker, three great wide receivers in Lockett, Metcalf, and then Jackson Smith and Jigba.
And then corners.
I like their tight ends. I think
animal.
Yeah. And you don't think, you know, they move Witherspoon in and out a lot like Lenore, right? He's outside, he's inside, he's everywhere. Well, they've done really well drafting the last 2 years under John Schneider to get in defensive guys that are dynamic. I think that's the best way to put it. And they don't have an elite pass rusher. Fine. I think you can make the same argument with the Baltimore Ravens last year, that they didn't have a guy like a Bosa or a TJ Watt or somebody like that, where you just put the hand in the ground and he's going to win. And now you have to double team him, and that shifts an entire offense. You don't have that with Seattle. You didn't have that with Baltimore last year. What you had was abject chaos. You had guys running a bear front and just doing crazy stuff and versatile, chaotic players. And I look at the Seattle defense, and they're not certainly to the talent level of the Baltimore defense of last year. That's a far cry. You know, you don't have those linebackers, but they got some good players, some good young players.
They also picked up Byron Murphy, who's sort of a terrifying human.
Right. And so you now are looking at a team where, okay, I feel okay about them week six, right? Thursday night football, even in Seattle. Never going to be a cupcake. I know that Brock Purdy's owned them in Seattle. I know all this stuff. But like, that's always going to be a fun, interesting, and difficult game, if nothing else, based on the schedule, based on the fact you're getting on a plane on a Thursday night. That one's not going to be easy, but I feel better about that one than I do about week 11. I don't know when Seattle's bye week is off the top of my head, but at that point, that is second half of the season, unquestionably. It's probably post their bye week, though that can be confirmed by somebody other than me who's willing to look it up right now. And man, like, I am just of the mindset that Mike McDonald is such a good coach, and particularly such a good defensive coach, that by the second half of the season, much like with the Rams last year, that defense is going to actually look the way McDonald wants it to look and be able to run the stuff that McDonald wants it to run. And Brock Purdy shit his pants on Christmas Day last year, having to face all of those multiple different looks. And by the way, Kyle Shanahan didn't cover himself in glory in that game either. Yeah. I'm very concerned about that Week 11 game against Seattle. If we get to that point,
this schedule is a goddamn grueler, man. I mean,
totally.
Like, you, after the first 6 weeks, like after that, let's say after that Seattle game, you got 10 days off for the Chiefs. You have to be 4-2. You have to be at least 4-2 at that point. Mm. And I know there's a route where they just destroy the Cowboys and the Bucks, and they beat the Seahawks, and they still own the Packers, and the Bills aren't themselves, and the Bears turn out to be worse. There's plenty of routes for it to be worse, or Stafford gets hurt by the time they play him, and Tua is collapsing. You know, there's plenty of routes for these teams to, you know, be messes by the time they see him, but they also have to be good. The 49ers have to be healthy. Like, I just don't feel good about them sustaining anywhere near the level of health they had last year. And particularly on the defensive line, given how bad they were in the run game, even with like a pretty healthy group last year. You know, Eric Armstead was hurt quite a bit.
Their entire run defense was predicated on Eric Armstead. I mean, that is not a foundational piece for run defense. And yet when he was out, it all went to shit. And when it was in, it was like fine. And they were holding up that, oh, we haven't given up a 100-yard rusher. That didn't mean anything, because they were still giving up 5 points something per clip. This is a team that doesn't run a lot of plays in a game. This is not, you know, air raid where everyone's getting 70 reps. It's a 100-yard rusher, but that's strictly because no one was getting the volume. You know, and so there's obviously that's an issue. And maybe Malik Collins, who is a guy we haven't talked a lot about, but was very good. I thought he was very good for Houston last year. He just got too expensive, and they wanted the receiver over the defensive tackle, and they felt like they had enough depth there, though I think they were proven incorrect on that. And they're in the market for a defensive tackle, defensive end as well right now, from what I've heard. Regardless, I thought he was pretty damn good. They just thought, oh, you're too expensive. We're going to get out ahead of this early. Don't really need you. We like what we can do here. Right or wrong, whatever. The Niners are getting 1 year effectively out of him. He needs to be massive, and not just literally. Like, he needs to be massive in the sense of the entire run defense is now on him, because Hargrave isn't going to help you there. He just isn't. And you don't want Bosa having to do that. And I have some serious questions about Leonard Floyd setting the edge still. I really do. I have seen no juice from him whatsoever.
I think it's going to be gross Matos in, and just, you're just saying, hey, just be stout. Don't try and do anything crazy. Just stand there.
Just go be Clee Farrell.
You can bull a guy, bull him, but don't get upfield trying to bull him. Like, stay where you are. Let Bosa do the pass rushing.
One guy doing the pass rush in the modern NFL is a recipe for failure, even if that guy is incredible. Yeah, and, you know, they had that. It's fine if you say, okay, well, we're going to just have Clee Farrell set the edge and he's going to hold the strong side. That's fine. By the way, you could have just re-signed Clee Farrell to do that instead of paying Yetro Gross-Matos double. And then, but you also had Armstead, who could hold up the D. So if Collins is at the same level as run stopper as Armstead, and you can get Yetro Gross-Matos or Leonard Floyd to just hold the edge, then you have the same defensive line as last year, which is so long as Hargrave is healthy. Okay. I mean, there's a lot of ifs in that sentence, man. And now you're talking about a linebacker core that, yeah, Fred is incredible. Fred's as good as it gets. And I like what I've seen from D. Winters, but D. Winters is going to bring you the same Greenlaw thing, right? So you're not sound when you have D. Winters back there. What you're doing is you're trying to have you're trying to bring juice. You're trying to bring somebody who, I mean, you saw his attempted tackle at the goal line. I mean, he just ran into a dude with his shoulder. His arms were by his side. He just went full missile, and it's fun as hell. But, like, is that good for stopping the run? I mean, is this team trying to be big play, or is this team trying to be? Well, there's a right word for it. I'm searching for it. Are they just trying to be proficient? Right? Are they just trying to be professional? Or are they just trying to be clean? I don't see either of them right now.
Yeah, I would say I think. One, I know we're being very pessimistic right now, but the vibes are, I'll just say it, the vibes are fucked up. The vibes are fucked up on this team.
And
they're not.
Jake and I are both saying that. We're both, you know, negative nihilistic. That's why you come here. You're a sicko. But when you have even the most, you know, positive, I'll just call names. When David Lombardi's even like, hey, but guys, this is off. Like, I don't think he's going to write it. And maybe I'm telling tales out of school here and you know, betraying confidences, but I haven't heard anyone be like, I don't know what you're talking about.
I was listening to Baldy this morning on 95.7, and they were like, you ever heard of team canceling joint practices? He's like, I've heard of teams not having them. I've never heard of a team canceling them due to injuries. To do that, to not have for McCaffrey to be hurt, for your potential starting corner and Yadam to be hurt, for your backup running back behind McCaffrey to be hurt, for the one defensive tackle, you're like, oh, he's actually kind of could be a gap plugger for us, for him to have a knee injury that sidelines him for half the year, for your former second round defensive end to you just say, yeah, he's done. His career's over.
You can't lock him.
Right. For you to have your left tackle, your star left tackle, who is the linchpin of your offensive line, who is the basis of having even mediocre offensive line play. He's like, pay me or I'm not coming in.
That's right.
Ayuk's just holding out or holding in. Well, there's no sign that's. Yeah, I mean, there's no real sign it's getting done. You've got really young safeties who I like, but totally unanswered questions about them. You've got Devondre Campbell, who's like older, and you're like, I guess Greenlaw is going to come back. Maybe it's an Achilles injury. Who knows?
Here's how bad it is. I forgot DeAndre Campbell was on the team.
Yeah.
I forgot he was on the team. I've been talking about D. Winters as if he's going to take that job. No, they're going to have slow as shit and stiff as shit Devondre Campbell take those reps for the first 2 weeks of the season until they realize, hey, there's a reason this guy was available after Eric Kendricks said no to us. You know, there's a reason that one of our arch rivals just let him walk out the door.
Yeah. Listen, Devondre Campbell, if he's like healthy, looks like any version of his former self, really good. I thought he's actually had a decent camp. He's not been playing every snap, but like he's at least looked like he knows how to play coverage. and can be there. We'll see.
I haven't seen that from him, so I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
What I've seen is a lot of standing on the sidelines talking to a trainer, and then when he does get an open space, getting absolutely cooked by, like, Cody Schrader, which, you know, I can't believe I'm using that as a pejorative, but, like, Cody Schrader shouldn't be cooking you if you're a former, you know, Pro Bowler. Like, I know that different points in their career, but, like, I mean, I saw Tim Patrick run the dude over. Like, what are we talking about here?
I also haven't even mentioned Ricky Pearsall, who we both love, has not been on the goddamn field because he's had a shoulder injury he picked up in OTAs. Then he had a hamstring injury. Now the shoulder injury's back. They had to bring in 12 wide receivers. They have like 12 wide receivers on the roster because they don't have enough guys to catch passes. They brought in Robbie Chosen, who were all supposed to be like, wow, Robbie Chosen. What are we talking about? What are we doing?
He was available to sign on August 12th. How good could he be? Now, by the way, I do want to note something. The 49ers have brought in players off the streets and had them start. I mean, Tashaun Gibson. They just brought him there like, we just need a safety. And then he came in and he was fine. That's at safety, though. That's at safety. And safety is one of those positions that's been totally screwed by the way that NFL cap wonks think about this. The how they build a team.
Safety is brutal. You're either like an elite young safety or you're dead to the entire league.
I mean, Justin Simmons 2 years ago was like the best safety in the league. He just signed. He just signed the other day. Yeah. So that's one thing. Okay, let's get into the truancy update. We're 40 minutes in. Trent Williams, nothing's happening. I mean, Diana Russini is out here saying that there's no movement. Now, by the way, the movement's pretty simple. Trent Williams doesn't move until the 49ers give him more money than any other offensive lineman in football. Full stop. And Trent Williams has no impetus to move otherwise. Yeah, he will just retire. That I know that is sort of just spoken about very loosely. Like, I want to be very clear about this. Every indication right now and everyone I talk to right now says that Trent Williams will straight up not show up to work at any point. This is a man who once held out until Halloween. He will not show up at any point if the 49ers do not pay him. He will retire. And
As he should.
Because he don't need this shit. And he's really apparently taken a liking to golf, which, mad respect, I wish I could golf.
He's looking at them and he's saying, okay, start Jalen Moore. See what happens.
Yeah. Your season's over. And what happens is your season's over before it starts. Full stop. You can be like, oh, well, you know, Trent Williams is one of those guys because you have now built the entire house. It's holding up on one stilt, and that stilt is number 71. And if he is not there, the house goes into the ocean.
Yeah, who's just pretty straightforward by his peers, like a top 10 player in the league,
He plays left
fucking tackle. He's your most important player, and you're just going, hey, I have a suggestion for the 49ers. Just do the deals. Do the deals. Yeah. You're not winning one over on Trent Williams.
You're not winning against Trent Williams. The Brandon Ayuk situation is, after all of this, right back to where we started. Right back to where we started, which is the 49ers are straight up not going to move on their number. And Brandon Ayuk, even if he does move on his number, isn't going to come down to the 49ers. We're in the exact same situation. And by the way, so like, I want to throw this your way. I wrote this in a column yesterday. One, this is really tricky because both sides are right. This is the problem. Wide receiver is a bubble. It's a bubble. Last year, 7 of the 10 highest rated PFF wide receivers were on their rookie deal. Okay. You look at the talent, you and I both know as well as anybody, the talent coming out of the college level right now at wide receiver is prodigious, and it just keeps growing every year. You got guys who were drafted in the third round this year. I'm thinking Javon Baker specifically, who would have been top 15 picks a couple of years ago. How much talent they have, right? These no doubter. These are, you know, franchise changing wide receivers. They're third rounders. You look at the way that Minnesota did it with Stephon Diggs. Now Buffalo has done it with Stephon Diggs. Kansas City has done it with Tyreek Hill. Where there's some other good examples. If you're a team that has a young quarterback who hasn't been proven, you go out and you pay a wide receiver quarterback money, quote unquote, so that they have a safety blanket. They have someone who can beat man one-on-one, beat press, and you just have something that can get your offense to move, and you build up the quarterback. When the quarterback is built up, you hightail that motherfucker out of there. You let some other team that needs him pay him. But that's how you do it. And that's what Minnesota did. That's what, you know, the Bills have done this past season. Has anyone complained that the Bills aren't Super Bowl contenders because Stephon Diggs isn't there? I haven't heard it yet. And so the 49ers are in an unenviable position to where they did just draft a wide receiver in the first round. They know the talent coming out at the college level, and they know that they're about to pay their quarterback more money than anybody ever. And it's pretty strictly, they know it's a bubble. But Brandon Ayuk is also right. He should be getting that much because that's what the market says he should get. And the 49ers are stuck in a position, and we're all stuck in a position. I should be more specific. We're stuck in the position to where the 49ers are right. They shouldn't pay Brandon Ayuk what Brandon Ayuk wants. But Brandon Ayuk should, in fact, get what Brandon Ayuk wants because that's what the market says. And because it's Brandon Ayuk and you can't definitively say he's an elite player on the level of a Hill
or a
Diggs. Okay, you can say that. I disagree with that. And the fact is that the fact that I disagree with it and you can say it when we're usually like-minded on this indicates the dissonance at play to where you can't just say give him whatever he wants. Another team can. Another team that's in a position to need a player like Brandon Ayuk, a Pittsburgh or a New England, I guess Cleveland because they're a shit show. But like those teams can say we'll give Brandon Ayuk what he wants. We'll overpay. We are willing to ride the bubble because this is something we need. The 49ers don't need Brandon Ayuk in the true definition of the term. They already have a Deebo Samuel. They have a replacement in-house, though he isn't practicing. Maybe they even have two replacements in-house. They have a Juwan Jennings, who is an exceptionally capable backup. Like, they're fine without him. So we're just going to stick in the same position. But as for wide receiver being a bubble, am I on to something there?
Yeah, I think a little bit. I think for the 49ers, let me just say what the 49ers are looking at next year because people talked about all the money. So let me just read you the cap hits the 49ers have coming their way. Debo, who will, like, if they extend Ayuk, be cut or traded, probably traded. Yeah. He has a $24 million cap. They can save about $10 million by trading him. $9 million or $17 million if they do it after June 1st, which
don't throw too many numbers our way. It's hard enough as is.
I know. Charvarius Ward has no contract and will have a cap hit of $12 million. Yeah. So you don't even get to keep him and he costs you $12 million. Then Bose is 20. Fred Warner's 30. George Kittle's 22. Trent Williams, 34. Mm-hmm. Javon Hargrave, who maybe you want to cut him. Probably you're going to cut him. If you don't, he's $28 million. You're going to cut Malik Collins because you're going to save $10 million. McCaffrey costs you $10 million. Leonard Floyd costs you $10 million. Yetur Gross-Matos costs you $10 million. that's why they're going.
I mean, in just if they just do the bare minimum, their dead cap hits are going to add up to quarterback money. If they do the bare minimum, they're paying what Brandon Ayuk wants in dead cap hits. It's one thing when you eat $5 million on Trey Lance. It's one thing when you eat a couple million on D4. Those guys didn't have anything they could give you anymore. You're not even doing that with these guys. You're selling these guys a year early because of the void year, because you don't want to extend them, because you don't want to give them 3 years when you really only know there's one or maybe two, if they're lucky, left in them. Right. You're doing that, and now you're getting out ahead of it. This is where the Ayuk thing comes into play. They tried to thread the needle between getting their books right for the future and winning now, because they didn't win the Super Bowl. If they won the Super Bowl last year, Brandon Ayuk's on a different team. There's no question about it in my mind, because they go, we can get off of this. We can move on. We'll do 1 year Debo. We'll draft a wide receiver. We'll draft another wide receiver with whatever pick we get, just as Minnesota did, right? They trade Stephon Diggs. They get a first round pick. They draft Justin Jefferson with that first round pick. The cycle continues. And I look at this and I go, they thought we have all the leverage, which they do, because they ultimately can walk away from this. And Brandon Ayuk will have to show up to work at some point if nothing changes. Now, that will be Sunday before a Monday game. So now he's not playing. And now, you know, I don't know if we can get him ramped up in time for Minnesota. And, maybe he'll play, you know, half the game against the Rams. Now, great. Three games into the season and you don't have your starting X wide receiver. Okay, that's fine. That's fine. You can manage, but you're not in a position where you're able to manage much right now. So instead of just getting out ahead of it, admitting, hey, this window is closed, but we need to keep this other window open, and this window is built around Brock Purdy. Instead of doing that, they decided to try to have it both ways, and that's where we're at now. And they're wrong, and on both sides, right?
Yep.
And we're just stuck in this state of ambiguity because Brandon Ayuk's right, the 49ers are right. The 49ers were right to try to win now. The 49ers would be right to try to win later. Like, it's just stuck in this state of gray, and that means nothing's going to change.
Here's the thing to me, though. Ayuk fits both of those plans in a way that almost no one else on the roster does. Like, he actually fits the same Purdy timeline because he's 26 and doesn't take a beating like Debo. That's rare. Like, they're in a situation where they're going to have to, like, extend Kittle, who's going to be 31, because if they don't, they're going to have to eat all this dead money, and he's going
to be
great. To
be fair, we have seen Jake Tonjes, and it might be worth cutting Kittle. That's what I'm saying. Jake, you're right that Brandon Ayuk fits the future timeline, but there is no future timeline when you're paying a quarterback $60 million where you're allowed to have a wide receiver also making 30, unless you don't really believe in that quarterback, in which case, why the fuck are you paying him so much?
I don't know if that's true.
Let me know how it goes for Miami this year, and let me know how it goes for the Lions moving forward, because I don't think it's going to work out for either of them. I think fundamentally it's pretty clear that if you believe in your quarterback, then you should be able to put B talent around them, and he elevates them. And Ayuk is unquestionably an A talent. He's an all pro, capital A, right? He's an A talent. But there is a wide receiver bubble to where these guys are getting paid more than they should be worth, because there are teams there so desperate for a quality wide receiver, and so cash heavy because they have a cheap quarterback that they're willing to throw it out there. But you just, I don't think that you can, the way the 49ers wanted to do it was pretty straightforward. They were trying to trade Debo, or they were trying to trade Ayuk before the draft. And the fact is, they didn't get either of those deals done. They asked way too much for Ayuk, 2 first round picks, and they asked too much for Debo, which was 1 first round pick. And even though someone did come to the table and say, hey, we're going to do it, it got bogged down in the details and they didn't get the deal done. And maybe that was on Debo. I honestly need to work that a little bit better to find out if Debo was the one who knocked it down, because they weren't going to offer him a contract extension. Regardless, you had to do one of the two. You either had to get ahead of the Debo situation and get the pick so that you can get somebody in there, or you had to get ahead of the Ayuk situation, knowing that, hey, if you still have Debo on the roster, you can only afford one of these guys at 20-something million, much less 2 of them at 30, or, you know, in this case, 50 million combined, more than. Like, you just can't do it. You can't do it. And I don't care that much about, we talk about it and people are interested in it because it's weird and it's messy and it's interesting. And that's way better than anything that's happening on the practice field today. But like, I don't care that much about the drama of it all. It's just gossip and fun things to talk about. What I care about is, this is a team that has to get its books right. And everything right now is pointing to just absolute catastrophe as it pertains to the books, in which case you have to do what the Rams did last year and do a complete clear the deck season. And when you haven't won a Super Bowl, you don't get one of those. You don't get one of those. So to try to thread the needle between win now and win later, when a clearing of the decks is on the table, you better fucking thread the needle. And they didn't.
Yeah. Also, by the way, one guy I didn't even really mention. So after this year, Nick Bosa, he makes 20, counts for 20 million next year. The year after that, let me just read these cap hits off. 42 million in 2026, 52 million in 2027, and 43 million in 2028.
I mean, the salary cap is going to go up, but Brock Purdy's going to take all of it. Like, this is the other thing. The salary cap's going to go up. Great. You know what definitely doesn't diminish in cost? Quarterbacks. Like, it's been proven, if you don't have one, you don't stand a chance. And so no team is willing to do the bold thing and just say, we're going to run out there with a schlub. I mean, Tampa Bay did it last year. And then what did they do? They paid him $30 million. They paid Baker Mayfield $30 million. Good luck to them on that. Like, here's Geno Smith in constant mediocrity. Good luck with that.
Yeah. I think the question we should like kind of be asking is 2026, you know, what does this team actually look like? Like, they've got Brock, they've got Bosa, they've got Warner. I would still probably say Kittle. Besides that, Ricky Pearsall, you know? Well,
and this comes back to a point that I want to keep making, mainly because I have no other good points. The Trey Lance deal set them further back than anyone wants to admit. Yeah. And it's not just they missed on the quarterback because they lucked out and they found the quarterback. So who gives a shit?
If they'd taken him, you know, third overall and that was just their pick, it doesn't matter.
If they hadn't moved up and they were able to get him, I think it was 12 originally, no problem. Probably no problem.
Taking Mac Jones.
You swung and you missed. It is what it is. You know, it's not great. No one's saying that that's a good thing, but you can manage it. It's the two other first round picks. That would have been high level talent, or it would have been serious depth, right? Now, who's to say what happens with the draft? It's all a crapshoot, blah, blah, blah. You know, you can get a Brandon Ayuk, you can get, you know, name your first round bust. The point is, this is a team that was in a position to where everyone was starting to get expensive and they didn't have the most valuable thing that you can have to mitigate that problem, which are first round draft picks. And what they did was they put all of their stuff on layaway and they spent like crazy because Parag was too busy with Leeds United and they went out there. I'm not kidding. The more I say it, the more people go, you're onto something there, buddy. And it's people who would know. They didn't do a good job of having two timelines, not to go full Warriors, but like every team in the NFL has to have the now and the later. And if you don't have either of them, you're consistently picking for the your later becomes now, right? Now you're just the Panthers and you're constantly hoping this is the year that the draft class will fix it. No, you need to be drafting guys to, hey, maybe they can give us, you know, a little bit of impact this season, but you're never filling a hole. You're never filling a hole. And what they're heading down the pipeline towards is a team that is currently the oldest in the NFL. They're the oldest team in the NFL. Their quarterback makes a rounding error. He wasn't even a top 51 on the salary cap when he first started. And that's all going to change. And he's going to take up 25 to 30% of your salary cap. And your books have not been cleaned up enough to manage that because you're going to be losing another 20 to 30% on just dead money. And that's if you swap the deck. Then the alternative is you extend and restructure all those guys. Well, now you've taken the oldest team in the NFL who is clearly showing its age right now. And now you've just doubled down on old. And what happens is a catastrophic collapse in a la the final year of Jim Harbaugh leading to four coaches in 4 years, a la so many other teams that can't get it right after. You know, the situation has dramatically changed. A New England, a Carolina post Cam Newton. I mean, just go down the line. Now you're stuck, not just in mediocrity, but in a expedited rebuild, which is the worst kind of thing you can do. You don't get a year zero. You get to fuck up with one quarterback in this league. Kyle Shanahan has already done his fuck up, and it set this team back way further than anyone wants to acknowledge because Brock Purdy covered up the surface level issue, but the deep issues are starting to bubble up now.
Yeah, I think what's something I'm thinking about, and this is somebody who, like, I think the Brock Purdy narrative is just, like, kind of tired in a lot of ways and gets bogged down being like, is he great? Is he? And it's a fair question because he's going to make $55 million, and they keep telling us he's going to make at least that. But, like, what if he has a decent season? Not great, you know? Like, he throws, like, a few more interceptions than usual. He's throws a couple Jimmy G interceptions. They're still, you know, they make the playoffs, but they're a wild card, right?
So you mean what if he's Dak Prescott?
Yeah.
Then he gets what Dak Prescott's about to get, which is about $60 million. Right. I mean, that's the thing. What's the best case scenario? Kirk Cousins. Well, that ain't cheap. What's the worst case scenario? Dak Prescott. Well, that ain't cheap either. Like, and the 49ers have flatly said that they're not going to do the big bold thing. They're not going to do the big, bold thing, which is we have Kyle Shanahan and we can just do it with whomever. I mean, Jordan Love got how much money off of half a season?
Yep.
I mean, Tua got $55 million. So now what's happened really, if we're being honest about this, is in a hard cap league, we have gotten to the point where quarterbacks are being treated like NBA players. And by the way, like, ask at the Atlanta Hawks how giving Trae Young all that money helped them. You know, ask so many teams, the Chicago Bulls, how DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine are doing for him. Just because a guy can get it, and I pertain this to wide receivers, I pertain this to, you know, quarterbacks too. Just because you can give the guy the money doesn't mean you should. But NFL coaches and NFL franchises are so risk adverse and so afraid of the narrative around them and so not confident in their own skills, despite the fact that anyone could die at any minute in the sport that they play, that they lock in mediocre at premier prices instead of doing the bold, brash thing, which might actually result in mediocre on a much, much lower price. And again, yep, you luck into Brock Purdy. That's fantastic. Well, now what? Now what? The fact of the matter is Brock Purdy a byproduct of the system, or is Brock Purdy the system? And the fact is, much like with Brandon Ayuk, no one can tell me. You can say he's elite. I can disagree. Right, you, and I think right, we both have cases. I think that there's still an argument to be had on if Brock Purdy's a byproduct of the system or if he is the system. No question. And of course, there's a little bit of both, right? Like Brock Purdy is unquestionably very good. Unquestionably. Would he be very good if he was the Cleveland Browns quarterback? I don't know. I don't know. And I hate to throw it in on Cleveland as much, but like here we are, front of mind.
Yeah. I think
if you put Brock Purdy on the Tennessee Titans, are the Tennessee Titans making the playoffs this year? I don't know. I can't tell you yep, that. Whereas if you put Patrick Mahomes on the fucking Tennessee Titans, I can tell you that.
Right.
You
push Josh Allen. Same thing like CJ Stroud on like most teams. I'm like, yeah, he's kind of carrying them to be relevant. Yeah, it's like,
I can't tell you that about Jordan Love. I can't tell you Jordan Love if you put Jordan Love right now on the Seahawks. I can't tell you that he's going to be the truth because he has Matt LaFleur as his offensive coordinator and they were done with him by November of last year. And then what did Matt LaFleur did? They just started running two man sets down the field. They went max protect and suddenly Jordan Love, who does have a cannon for an arm and is highly accurate when he pushes the ball downfield, when he didn't have to read as much, now suddenly he's able to lead. You know, I think he led the NFL in passing touchdowns last year, but he legitimately was done on Thanksgiving. They win on Thanksgiving in an upset against the Lions. And then it was off to the races. But you look at the nuance of what changed. Matt LaFleur made the offense more simple for him. And in that, he still became, for I think a moment, the highest paid player in the history of the NFL by his contract. It's the same situation that happened with Jimmy. It's the same thing. Jimmy gives you half a good season. And what do? They made him the highest paid player in the NFL. And 2 years later, they're like, I don't know if we can fucking do this.
By the way, that Jimmy contract is like half of what quarterbacks are making now.
Right.
Side note, two things.
It'll be a third Raiders, in a couple of days.
Two things. The Raiders just signed a Nathan Peterman. Two.
Awesome.
Jimmy apparently made some comments where he's like, you know, I didn't get to be myself, you know, with the 49ers and the Raiders, which is to say, so are you saying – And the Rams are, which is to say, oh, now you're back up again. You get to be yourself. You're saying you should have been a backup.
Well, there's no pressure. There's no pressure on being the backup quarterback. But by the way, limitations are the key to life. And Jimmy Garoppolo should have never been allowed to be himself. That's just good coaching to prevent that from happening. I've seen Jimmy being himself. It's not good. It's not good. He's a great backup, though. Like, he would be a great backup.
Yeah, good. Yeah. He's
just going to get the ball out of his hands and give it to the good players. Like that's a good model. It
just a zip over the middle.
And by the way, and again, when I go back to this Brock Purdy thing, is he a byproduct of the system or is he the system? That's the difference. That's the difference. Jimmy Garoppolo is a byproduct of the system. And for years and years and years, I told you he's not a very good quarterback. He's not very good. And everyone goes, well, I'm looking at all these wins and I'm looking at all these stats and it seems pretty good. Yeah, I mean, he's not a total scrub. He's better than me and you, and he's better than the Peterman. But, like, he's a byproduct of the system. He gets out of that system, and it all goes to complete shit.
Right.
What's to say Brock Purdy's a much better quarterback, but is he enough to transcend the system? Because the system is predicated on having elite playmakers around him. And the fact is that they haven't shipped off Brandon Ayuk already. Kind of tells me in that they're willing to pay this guy at least 26, kind of tells me that they're not all in.
I would say I don't know that keeping Ayuk is a reflection of Purdy. I hear what you're getting at. I just think Ayuk is a guy that, like, is going to produce no matter how this offense changes. He is on the same timeline. Mm-hmm. He's Purdy's favorite target. I think that's immensely valuable. I'm with you. I think this season we put a lot of concerns, a lot of bad vibes out there. Like, we're gonna find the fuck out, man. Like, we'll know.
Yeah,
like,
no, that's the beauty of it. We could, you know, this could be one of those things where we come back and say, please don't watch the August 13th edition.
Yeah. But this season, by the way, is a referendum. All these
100%.
On when you everything go, they built.
They are all the way in on this season. And it will... Well, yeah, if they can get their players on the field, maybe we can find out. They're all the way in. They're all the way in. Now, they do have to finish it with 71. And they have to get the job done with 11 one way or another. And by the way, the fact of the matter is the 49ers could very strictly do what Joe Douglas did the other day and say, we're not trading you. The 49ers can pull their offer at any point. And frankly, I'm starting to think we're not far away from a point when they should. They should just say, Brandon, we've tried. The time for negotiation is over. Our $26 million offer, which you found to be so abhorrent, is off the table. You are under contract for this upcoming season. And by the way, your hold-in is no longer considered valid. We're going to do a physical tomorrow. And we're, you know, that neck and back issue that you have are going to be wiped out is not. This or you can go on, you know, we can, you can go on injured reserve, like, or something like that. Like, they can do something to mess with his money.
Yeah.
At some point, they can just say, okay, push has come to shove. No resolution's been made. Play the season. The way that the Patriots are going to do with Matthew Judon. Judon's going to have to play on his fifth year option or whatever the final year of his contract is. I think it's like $6 million or 16, one or the other. They can do the exact same thing. And I don't know when that point is, but we're a lot closer to it now than we were a week ago. I think that's true.
Yeah. And I think we're all sick of talking about these guys and their contracts, and they deserve their money. And also I just would like to be done talking about it and to see if the 49ers actually can field a team.
That's the killer. We wouldn't be talking. We always talk about the Trent Williams thing. It falls on the back burner because it's not messy. We would all agree that no one wants to talk about this Ayuk situation anymore. We would say the same thing about the Trent Williams situation if it was front of mind. But the fact of the matter is the San Francisco 49ers football team that's on the field has given us absolutely nothing to talk about other than negative things. Like, here's the list of positive things I can say have happened in training camp so far. Diamador Lenore looks good. The rest of the corners look good. Jair Brown has his moments. That's it. D. Winters does the Dre Greenlaw thing. What am I missing? What am I missing?
Malik Mustafa.
Yeah, Malik Mustafa. It's great.
Jake Tonjes.
And you see my point now. Like, hey, this guy who's definitely going to get cut, look pretty good. Maybe they keep him on practice squad. How many times have we said maybe they keep this guy on practice squad in training camp?
Yeah, let me just end on this. This is the fifth year I think I've been at training camp. I don't know if we were allowed to go in 2020.
We were.
Or what the deal? No. They might have let us.
We were outside. No. We were. Yeah. We were in 2020 because we were in the tent.
Yeah, they let us like with masks from a distance. Yeah. So it's my fifth year going.
To be fair, I really enjoyed that training camp because that was what the Trey Lance training camp. That was interesting in and of itself. And I just liked being in the tent. I don't like going into that sterile locker room. Let's just do it in the tent.
It was warm out. It was nice. Vibes were good. Branch was being even funnier than usual. Eric Branch. Awesome. Love Eric Branch. But it was, I've been doing this for 5 years and I've never seen a training camp this lackluster. Mm-hmm. This just like sad and weird from the 49ers. And I'm not just like saying it just because we have a podcast and we talk about the 49ers and we have to talk about something. Like, it's weird. It's weird. There's the starters aren't playing. There's no juice. Fred Warner basically all but admitted, like, he's like, yeah, I'm not, there's no one to bully out there. So, you know, nothing to see here. It's off and they need to get their guys in the building. And time is ticking, and this practices do matter, even if you're a star player. Like, Nick Bosa said it, he played pretty poorly because his thing lingered too far into the offseason, and he started slow. Mm-hmm. It matters, and if they tell you it doesn't matter, that's just because that's what they have to tell you.
There's a flip side to this, too, with the Ayuk thing. I don't know what kind of work he's getting in on the side, because technically he's a member of the 49ers. Like, I don't see him working out on the side. I see him walking around. Is he allowed? Is that because he has to have that fake injury? They can't allow him to work out. I mean, I don't know what kind of reps he's getting on the side, at least with Jimmy back in the day when they're like, we're going to trade you, but just don't come over here. Which, by the way, every fucking year there's something with this team. No other team has this weird of situations perennially. And that's something the Niners have to look at overall. Like, why are we like this? At least with the Jimmy thing, you could turn around and see him working.
It was awesome. It was awesome. It was so weird.
And you know what? Again, as a player, nothing but disdain for Jimmy Garoppolo. As a guy, just A plus. What a dude.
Oh, yeah.
He was so cool. Yeah. I mean, he's just generally so cool. It helps to be exceptionally handsome, which is something you obviously know, Jake, but I could never possibly relate to. And my God, he handled that thing really, really well.
Jimmy, to me, has always been like a Chicago sort of attractive Forrest Gump, where he's just like, he's just sort of been like bounced around and they're like, I like that guy. Should we make him our quarterback? And Jimmy's like, me? They're like, yeah, you're a quarterback. He's like, okay. They're like, oh, yeah, he's pretty good. Do you want to go play in college? Sure, I'll do that. Do you want to go play for the Patriots? Sure. Do you want to replace Tom Brady? Sure. Not really. And then they shipped him off to the 49ers. And he's suddenly, like, he just sort of, he didn't really fail up. Like, he showed some things. But, like, he just sort of kind of bounced around.
The Niners effectively went to the Super Bowl with, like, a Geno Smith type as their quarterback.
That's right. A little disrespectful to Geno Smith.
Okay, well then, fair enough. Take it down a level. I mean, Nick Foles won a Super Bowl, but Nick Foles didn't get the Eagles to that point. They had an MVP caliber campaign from Carson Wentz.
And Nick Foles was also like a vibes connoisseur, you know, just a magic lightning in a bottle, you know.
Well, it helps when you got it. You know what I mean? Helps when you got it. All right. We're doing Dick Talk. That means it's the end of the show. Jake, tell the people where they can read you.
Yeah. Follow me on Twitter at Hutch Diesel. I'm trying to grind some tape, get prepared for the season, do some preview stuff.
Unlike a certain NFL football team.
Yeah. I'm trying to. Sorry. All right. I'm ending it there. I just saw a column that is cracking me up that we'll take that off air.
Okay. Sounds good. Bye.